I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Jesse Brown joins me now, the journalist and humorist, formerly of Maclean's, TVO, and the CBC, recently debuted a new podcast, Canada Land. It's a terrific program where he presents insightful discussions about the Canadian media scene, and Mr. Brown is eminently acquainted with it, what with his programs, The Contrarians and Search Engine, which aired on CBC Radio, the latter which went over to TVO's website until it ended last year. He's written for Saturday Night, winning a National Magazine Award for Humor. As well, his writing has appeared in the Globe and Mail, the National Post, and Vice. On his program, he pricks the pomposity of journalism in Canada, holding the insular world of media to account. The subtitle of the show is Old Canada versus New Canada. His guests provide marvelous insight. When the program began in October, his first guest was the CBC's Michael Enright. It's a fascinating conversation between the two, as are later episodes, which deal with everything from the politics at the public broadcaster, the wireless business in this country, the nature of creating television and film in Canada, the business and art side, as well as two Canadians who are making a go of it in Los Angeles, among other guests. I'll get him to tell us about the show, what he wants to accomplish, and the feedback he's gotten thus far. Though this is a program we need in this country, I suspect it's not a comfortable experience for those of us listening, and I'm curious to know what he's heard back so far. Go to CanadaLandShow.com to stream and or download the show. It's a really fine program. Please welcome to the Plant Online program in Toronto, Jesse Brown. Mr. Brown, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us. As I said in the introduction and before we started, this is a great show where I don't necessarily know all the guests you have on, but I find when I listen, I'm just fascinated by what they all have to say. As well as what you have to say, and whatever it is you're talking about. I mean, it's thoughtful and it's interesting. What was the goal in creating a show like this?
Well, I guess most specifically to bring media criticism to Canada. It's sort of a shocking lapse, you know, that we don't have it. We used to. It used to be Antonia Zabisius used to write a column for the Star. I think Warren Kinsella briefly wrote something for the Post, but it became, he's a bit too much coming from a partisan point of view. And, you know, the CBC tried various times to have media criticism shows. They've taken off elsewhere in the world, everything from comedic satirical stuff like The Daily Show and The Colbert Report to, you know, NPR's On the Media. And then, I mean, it's just an established beat everywhere else. David Carr's New York Times, there's something like 47 other media critics at various American newspapers. I could go on. Al Jazeera has a media criticism show. The Brits have a few of them. Anywhere where there's a free press, if the ethic is that, you know, we as journalists scrutinize institutions, especially public institutions, because that scrutiny is needed and the public has a right to know about those sorts of things, to not subject ourselves to that same scrutiny, it's a no-brainer for just about every other country. For some reason, and, you know, my guests and I have explored it, what those reasons might be. We don't have anyone doing that here. I'm fascinated by the media. I feel after, you know, a number of years working within it, I have a pretty good grasp of who's who and what's going on. I also feel like it's a fascinating time for the media, a violent and, you know, disruptive time, and an inspiring and an interesting one. So just, you know, part of my intention was just that it's really good material that nobody else is going after. And I also felt like it was time to kind of to go there and to poke that raw nerve a little bit and see what happened. So I guess in not such a nutshell, that's the intention of the program.
So it's not enough that the CBC has an ombudsman or a couple of the newspapers have public editors.
I don't think that. I mean, I want to do an episode on that. The CBC's ombudsman is Esther Ankin, who is a fine journalist, but who spent her career at the CBC. The Toronto Star's public editor, Kathy English, also is from the Star, Sylvia Stead of the Globe and Mail. This has been kind of the entrance of a public editor, which is something that the New York Times really kind of spearheaded, I believe. They were the first to say, well, it can't be from somebody from this organization. You can't scrutinize your peers if you've been, you know, working at the next cubicle for decades. And journalism, you know, anywhere you go, not just in Canada, is incredibly, the relationships run deep. Usually people have a whole history of romantic relationships if they're not married to somebody they work with. And, you know, it's just so intertwined, and there's no way of expecting somebody to, you know, the idea of a public editor is to represent the reader in ways that are going to, you know, hurt the feelings and scrutinize the work of reporters and journalists. So the fact that we allow people, the fact that these news organizations in Canada haven't made that distinction and made outside hires is, you know, doesn't do a lot to give credibility to the role itself.
And, I mean, there are some, there are a few media reporters in this country. Those that haven't gone over to Twitter yet. But that's not enough as well, right?
Yeah, I think that it's wonderful that there are some media reporters, and some of them, I think, do a very fine job. A reporter is different than a critic.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, we have critics who are, and I kind of want to define criticism in a wider sense than thumbs up or thumbs down. I don't rate, you know, newspaper columnists and reporters and you know, CBC shows. I'm talking about an analytic discussion of what the trade of journalism is up to. And in a wider sense, I'm interested in what's happening with Canadian media, as, you know, you might define it, through scripted comedy, television shows, what's happening on the internet, you know, not just things that fall under, like, news journalism specifically. I've kind of dabbled here and there around that. I sort of exist in a community of people who work in the media in a wider sense. I'm interested in advertising, marketing, all this stuff is stuff that I'm interested in.
Reality television. I found that program quite fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, one kind of theme I think that, you know, in these early days of Canada Land, the show is hitting on is just that the lines between these different ways of telling stories and ways of telling, supposedly true stories, reality TV is filled, I have learned, with former Canadian documentary filmmakers and journalists. You know, I worked with Jeff Siskin at Search Engine at CBC, and he's now running Storage Wars Canada. So people who have the ability to go and tell stories out in the world using real people as the characters in those stories are going to find work wherever they can. And, you know, with the media fracturing and layoffs and whatnot, people are finding themselves in strange places.
An issue that's in the press, well, Rob Ford's been in the press for a while, but something that I found quite interesting was the media reaction to the interview that he gave Conrad Black. What did you make of the, we'll talk about the lawsuit that the reporter from the Toronto Star initiated, but just about how Black himself conducted the interview and sort of the criticism he's gotten over that. Like, I mean, I feel some sort of sympathy for him, for Conrad Black, because I'm not a journalist, but I do these interviews with people, and his show is not necessarily a news show. It's you know, he builds them as conversations, and which is sort of what I'm trying to do on the internet myself. Do you think that a lot of the criticism he got was fair?
I don't know. I mean, I'll go off on this a little bit, seeing as you've invited me to. I mean, I feel like that, you know, Conrad Black is a much more erudite version of Rob Ford in that they both are trolls. And I think that Conrad Black is a very witty and skilled tweaker of Canadian, the propriety in the Canadian establishment, and of which there is, you know, no shortage of these self-imposed ideas and standards. And, you know, he likes to rattle the cage a little bit. I think that it was a provocation. I don't think that anybody is under the illusion that what he's doing is a, you know, journalistic endeavor. I do think that he, you know, initiated like a softball conversation with Ford of little interest to me, outside of the carnival aspect of seeing these two kind of ill-matched people together. I was really put off by the way that the media kind of closed ranks against Conrad Black after that. And you know, put his feet to the coals as if we expected something different from him when the Fords appeared on the National with Peter Mansbridge and lied to him repeatedly on the, you know, supposedly Canada's premier national newscast, and none of those facts were challenged. So I really feel like there is a sense of who's one of us and who's one of them, and Conrad Black is one of them, and he's fair game. And so he received a lot more of a drubbing than Mansbridge, who I think is, you know, infinitely more deserving of some of that criticism.
And so this lawsuit now by the Toronto Star Reporter, what do you make of that?
Look, you know, as a private citizen, you know, Daniel Dale can sue whoever he wants, and, you know, journalists are, there's no separate law book for us. We, you know, we have the same rights and protections as anybody else, and, you know, I guess the courts will make of that. Well, now that Ford has quasi-apologized, I don't know if it's going to go forward or not. I felt, in a more general sense, you know, I'm not going to say, I could say what I would do. I wouldn't have sued if it was me. I don't know what the right thing to do would be. It didn't sit well with me, because we're in an environment in Canadian, you know, media in general, where if not the libel laws, then the fear of them and the fear of libel lawsuits, you know, what they call libel chill, has really silenced a lot of news reporting and commentary. The idea that the Fords are this litigious, you know, rabid, rich family who are just going to go and ruin anybody who says boo about them, it turned out to be false. They haven't sued anybody. And the libel laws in Canada, which, you know, journalists seem to quake in their boots over, have a wide exception for speech that is, you know, journalism, news reporting in the public interest, as long as you, you know, made efforts to make sure that what you were saying was true. We largely don't test those laws. We just steer clear of them. And as a result, you know, the Toronto Star sat on their Ford story and needed Gawker to break that story before they could go to press. And, you know, it was, for all intents and purposes, they originally were reporting not on Ford or the Ford tape, but on a Gawker story about the Ford tape, which was ridiculous because they refused to even name Gawker. It was just, you know, generic U.S. website originally. So all of, you know, the Ford's thing, you know, is exposing a lot of the anachronisms and, you know, I would even say hypocrisies and limitations that either self-imposed or are imposed upon the press in Canada. And, you know, I think we're getting kind of thrown under a spotlight for the world to see how things are a little bit weird and different here and a little bit shut down in a way that stops people from just, like, reporting the news or speaking the truth.
And do you find that media consumers, citizens generally, they're turned off by, say, the political process because the media isn't as transparent as they'd like? Or that generally citizens or media consumers would like to know how the sausage is made, if you will?
I think there's no question that people have an appetite for media criticism and for a look you know, into the machinery of how information gets to them. You know, it's a weird thing to try to make a distinction between the Canadian, you know, news consumer and the American, because the Canadian news consumer, Canadian media consumer, is consuming 80, 90, 95% American content to begin with. So why a Canadian would watch The Daily Show and listen to On the Media and read Gawker and read all these newspaper media critics in the States and then just not be interested in the Canadian version thereof? I don't buy that for a second, and the early strong response to my show would indicate that's accurate. And I knew that beforehand. I knew after the Margaret Wente scandal that people really want to know about this stuff, in part because it's never spoken about. So, you know, I think there's that. And then, you know, you brought up a really good point about the disenfranchisement from the political process, which is, I guess, kind of a wider theme of what I'm getting at with Canada Land. It's not limited to what's wrong with the Canadian media or trying to reform that. I really feel like the Canadian media establishment is just sort of a reflection of a growing chasm that exists in all ways, you know, in terms of finance, in terms of, you know, like economics, the job market, in terms of media consumption, what we read, in terms of politics, in terms of, you know, who's benefiting from social programs or from the Canadian pension, you know, everything is kind of being drawn upon these lines of old Canada and new Canada. And actually, Michael Valpy in The Star recently did a series that looked at this and saw that there's really never been a time of you know, greater solitude between the generations in Canada. And I kind of want to try to do something to, if not close that — that's a lofty goal and that's sort of more of a political ambition that I'm not taking on — but I am trying to look at it and regard it and talk about it.
So how would you get people to talk to you, to come on your show? I mean, I'm sure you talk to these people off tape, and they have opinions and ideas they'd like to share, but I'm sure because of professional obligations, they probably wouldn't want to come on Canada Land.
Yeah, it's a challenge, I'll tell you that. You know, I'm asking people to speak specifically. You know, I knew this when I was booking guests back at the CBC. If you got an American on, they spoke in, you know, tight, specific sentences using proper nouns. They tell you what they were. You know, this is just a general rule that I found to be true. And in Canada, people were always sort of, they would much rather talk about the larger theme or the larger issue or the larger controversy. They don't want to get specific. Statements are always qualified. And I think it's largely, you know, people talk about Canadian politeness and whatnot. It's just a smaller country, and we all know each other. So it's difficult to get people to come on my show, even people who are, you know, I know them to be outspoken critics of, you know, their colleagues and their bosses and people in rival shops. People who don't want to just gripe but care passionately about what they're doing and how it could be done better. You know, if you want to find out this ongoing conversation about, you know, what should the CBC do and how should it reform and who should it serve, there's a lot of bad opinions out there. There's a lot of opinions from, you know, kind of, you know, Tory hacks who just want to gut the place. I don't think that's all conservatives, but there certainly are people like that. Who you don't hear from are CBC employees. And if you speak to them privately, every one of them has a very informed and passionate opinion about what they would do if they were calling the shots. I can't get any of them to come on my show. They're not allowed to speak publicly about the CBC, and they choose not to speak about it on the CBC. So they leave that debate to the CBC's enemies. And that's true in a wider sense, you know, in all these organizations. There's only a few shops to work for, so it's hard to get somebody at the Star to say anything about somebody at the Post, or even, you know, God forbid, somebody at the Star. And that's like, I've been alarmed at how people just look at me like I'm crazy, like, why on earth would I come on your show and say those things? If you look at a more robust, you know, media landscape, you know, and we always point to America's because that's what we consume a lot, it's just understood that we're not children running a student newspaper at a high school. We are in the business of speaking our minds and telling the truth, and so that happens regularly, and that's the kind of ferment of news discussion in the States, is people are constantly analyzing each other's work, debating each other's work, talking about what happens behind closed doors, and it's hard to get people to do that here. And so I'm 12 episodes in. I have found some, you know, brave souls, angry people, you know, in many cases it's somebody who has, you know, been, either they're retired or they've been fired or something didn't go their way and they want to say something about it. Occasionally I get somebody who's in the thick of it and says, you know what, it's time somebody spoke up about this. And I can't always get that kind of guest. And in between, I've been having a lot of fun just trying to, you know, you're not going to have some revelation or bombshell every episode. Sometimes I just want to talk to somebody who's a television writer from Canada trying to make it in the States and just find out what's their life like and why did they leave and you know, what's the culture of their work. So it's helpful to me to describe media criticism in a general sense, you know, just from a practical point of view. And I'll go on to say the vast majority of talk shows that you'll hear are people who are selling something. There's somebody who has a new book out. Somebody's on the talk show circuit, or somebody has, you know, published an essay in last weekend's paper, and now they're promoting that argument or that idea, which, you know, I've done stuff like that, and I've got no problem with it. But I have made life hard for myself. I'm trying to not get those people. My only rule for the show so far, you know, as it's figuring out what it wants to be, is to not put on my show what everybody else has on their show.
And are you worried that, I mean, this is, I wouldn't mind if the show devolved into featuring people who have access to Grind, or a gossip show even. But is that something that you're mindful of, or is that something that you wouldn't want Canada Land to become?
I would not want that, and I've had a couple opportunities where people have kind of, you know, offered to share personal information about public figures, and I have to kind of make the editorial decision as to whether it has any bearing on, you know, the show is about the work. It's about the product that the media creates. I don't want to say anything definitively. I'm making this up as I go along. I'm figuring out what works and what doesn't. I'm going with my, you know, whatever new sense I developed and gut instinct. But I don't, some of the stuff that Gawker features and is sort of most known for, even though they have some fine writing, there's a lot of wonderful essays and long format and journalism on Gawker, but they are explicitly a gossip site. And I read that stuff with great interest. It's salacious, fun stuff to read.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not aiming for that with my show. I am aiming to describe, like I say, the culture of this stuff, and sometimes you get into personal stuff about people, which, you know, I hope to hit on just because it's descriptive and gives you a feeling. I mean, one thing I want to do is we present the news in this weird, stilted, you know, phony, outdated, you know, authoritative Walter Cronkite kind of way. I want to describe what it's actually like to work in these places, to be in these places, how the sausages get made, as you say. So sometimes you'll hear some little details about people, and I want to include them because they add color and character. I don't want to go digging for the, you know, a certain kind of dirt just for dirt's sake.
Now, what about the problem that Canada Line is to Toronto? I mean, I'm from Vancouver. I've never been to Toronto, and you had a guest on a few weeks back who mentioned an intersection in Toronto. And
yeah.
And I mean, I've never been there, so I don't know where that is, or I don't have any reference point to that. The media, one of the criticisms is that it's too Toronto, and do you worry about Canada Land being like that?
I do. I mean, I think that there's an argument to be made, and maybe a cowardly one, that because the Canadian media is so Toronto-centric, a media criticism show is going to concern itself with the goings-on in Toronto disproportionately. That being said, I think that that's true, but I've also got my own biases, and I also draw from my own, you know, social network, for guests, because I want people to speak with me candidly, and I happen to live in Toronto, and so most of the people I know do as well. I also have been trying to do something in my old show, Search Engine. You know, I did interviews that were almost always via Skype, and I think it's a wonderful tool, as you well know, for getting, you know, people at a moment's notice. You know, it used to take like days of planning to get somebody into a studio when I was booking guests, and now I can just call somebody up at their desk and get an interview. But there is something that happens when I get somebody alone, preferably in my studio, and have a long conversation. You can hear it not just in the sound quality, which is important to me, but in the in what gets said. And so that limits me to, you know, people who are in Toronto, you know, and sometimes I just interviewed somebody who we spoke at length about Montreal, but he happened to be in Toronto. So I going forward, I'm going to be trying to make a few more trips around the country. I don't want to do what I used to be asked to do at the CBC, which was to kind of just fill in the blanks of each province for the sake of saying you've done it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to just, okay, got somebody from Saskatchewan, so they can't say I'm Toronto-centric. I want the content to lead. I want to present the best stories I can, whatever part of the country they originate from. Or, you know, I've gone to L.A. and San Francisco to get stories as well, because we've got a lot of Canadians living there. So I do worry about that. I do worry that it's just going to sound like a report from my block. And, you know, with the limited resources that I have, I'm trying to do something about it.
What do you do the rest of the week?
I still write for Toronto Life. I still do some freelance for various magazines and some, you know, stuff that is less, you know, trade publications here and there come to me. So I've kept a little bit of a freelance journalism practice going. You know, mm-hmm. I've been a little bit hesitant to, put all my eggs in this. I don't know what's next. I've got a sponsor for Canada Land. I hope that either they stay with me or I find some other way to keep it going. It's what I want to do exclusively. It doesn't cover my entire livelihood at this point, so I'm sort of trying to transition to making that happen. So I keep some other work going, and like any kind of jobbing freelance journalist, which is sort of the norm these days in media and journalism, I've got a bunch of income sources.
Yeah.
But this is my, you know, it's the passion project. It eats up most of my time. It's what I'm most engaged with.
And it's fun for you, do you find?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I love it. It's... I love the engagement with the world. I mean, you know, when I kind of came to this point, there were a few different projects I was considering, and, you know, I've sort of had a few different book ideas in my head for years, and I can't seem to lock myself into a room. My years working within, you know, news journalism, journalism media, have kind of got me addicted to a constant back and forth with, you know, readers, other journalists and writers, I'm enjoying this conversation with you, and I have a lot of different exchanges like that every week. I'm curious about what happened today and what people make of it every day. And it sort of prevents me from maybe sinking my teeth into some, you know, more substantial work that would sit on a shelf and I could be proud of years from now. I seem to be doomed to be in this, ephemeral medium that you know well. I kind of love it. It's creative work to some extent, but it's also just like, you know, you expect cold water to come out of the tap when you wake up in the morning and turn it on, and you expect, sound to come out of a radio or a computer. And, you know, it's a utility that we provide. It's just part of the daily flow of life. It's exciting for me. And, you know, what this project has allowed me to do is a kind of, like, subtextual conversation that I was always having with other people in the field or just yelling at my radio like any other crank. I'm now putting on, that is the subject of what I do. And, it's thrilling. If you're lucky enough in journalism to cover something that nobody else is covering, to be able to say something that nobody else is saying, I don't think it's any great feat of my own. I think it's just more like the absence of it from anybody else. It's a lot of fun.
You know what you should do if you want to look back at it years from now is you take the tapes or the audio, put them on CDs, and then you'll have them on a shelf to look at, you know?
There you go.
I think that's
it. On CDs, I don't know if we'll know what that is, but I'll do a leather-bound Canada Land box set one day.
Yeah, like a flash drive isn't that, eminent. You know, it's not that important looking. But if you have, them on a shelf, in a leather-bound box, and yeah, it looks pretty good.
You know what, I fetishize like a beautiful object on the shelf, that cultural object like anybody else, mm-hmm. but I love the fact that all this stuff is just disappearing into the air, and it's just, it's ephemeral and ethereal, like I say, but it'll also be, somebody will have it online, I got 3 downloads in the year 2023, then that's cool. Like, it's just entering stuff into the commons and having it be part of, turning it into data. You never know, just being involved in the internet for the past 10 years or so, you never know what's going to be made of your contribution to the network. Like, it always comes back in some unexpected and usually exciting way.
I asked you what you did the rest of the week. It seems like you're at Corey Mintz's house for dinner a lot. Is that accurate?
He hasn't had me over for dinner in, like, I don't know what's happened. I used to be a frequent guest. I was always there, Ed McMahon to just round out the room and fill in silences. That guy hasn't invited me. I got to give him a call and figure out what's happening. I have my own product now that I could go and promote if he wants to have a dinner to write about me, and I haven't heard from him. So thank you for reminding me about that.
Yeah, the food seems good. I mean, he's a pretty good cook.
Yeah, I think he's, it's like anything else with him. He's a little OCD. It's very technically accomplished and perfect, but, he's got his complaints with my cooking. He thinks I put too much cloves in my stew, but I cook from the heart. I don't measure to the microgram. I don't know what he's doing, but it's a little too controlled for my taste.
Jesse, this has been a great deal of fun for me because I'm a big fan of Canada Land. I hope it does well for you and that it continues.
I thank you so much for the interest. It's been a lot of fun talking to you.
The website for more, CanadaLandShow.com. It's host Jesse Brown. Join me on the line from Toronto and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.